Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. It's Thursday, which means it is Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. And we've got an in-studio author this week, which means, doesn't always mean this, but it does mean that this time that there is going to be a book signing coming up later in October, and we'll make sure to before we wrap things up this morning, to give you a date and time on that. It'll be at ABC Books. The author today, Hope Sheridan, the book is Moan, Stories of Suicide, Grief, Grace, and God. Very personal, the book to you.
Yes.
Well, and so let's start off, just tell us, what prompted you to write the book? What's it about? I know it's very open-ended questions here.
Yeah, sure. And it takes a whole book to describe that, right? So thank you, first of all,
absolutely,
for the opportunity for this message. The book, Moan, is inspired. I believe it's divinely inspired. And it's really been a 15-year process. It started with the suicide of my daughter's stepbrother when they were both 16. And that's just devastating and traumatic in multiple ways. And as I tried to help her heal, recover from that, get through that, I started researching. I'm like an analyst by nature, and I had to understand what I was dealing with. And as I started researching the phenomenon of suicide, frankly, as a parent, I was scared to death with what I learned and what I didn't know. And as I started researching, there was just something on my heart that said, you know, remember this. Keep this. Pay attention to this. And from there, I just kept learning and learning. And eventually, I don't want to give away too much of the book, but eventually she lost her entire step family, including her father, to suicide. And so I kept learning each person who passed had a unique story and a unique reason why. Or, as I like to say, reason why not. And as I learned and learned over the years, and we kind of dealt with this, there was one image that just stuck in my mind. And for her, she was unique in that she had a relationship with God. And we drew upon that time and time again, and actually used these to make her stronger, deepen her faith, realize that suffering is part of life, and there's a way through. And so, on the other side of that, I felt about 4 years ago like I needed to write this book. It was just a matter of when. And finally, I got the green light. And I felt now is the time. And I couldn't have predicted the time better. The rise of suicide rates post-COVID, especially among high schoolers, young men in particular. The book is full of statistics that, as a parent, I found helpful. And this book is not written, this book is written for the layperson. This is my message to parents, grandparents, and other people who don't know how to start understanding this topic. So the first half of the book is the story of my daughter and how we made it through, how we learned, how we survived all of that and came out on the other side. The second half of the book is the, I don't want to call it statistics, but it's the information that I learned that I think is really relevant. So kind of the summary of everything I've learned over the last 15 years in researching this topic. And really, I'm most excited and astonished about the timing and some very important data that came out in 2023 that actually answers lots of questions.
We're talking with our author of the week, Hope Sheridan. The book is Moan, Stories of Suicide, Grief, Grace, and God. The first word there, Moan, in all caps. And early on in the book, the first half, I think one reads that chapter and recognizes where that came from, that moan. Would you explain that?
The word?
Yes.
That, of course, everyone looks at and then gasps. And the story is very personal. I hadn't told anyone that I was supposed to write this book. For 10 years, it was just something between God and I. And then one morning in December 2021, my husband woke up, sat up in bed, looked at me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going on? And he relayed to me this very vivid dream he had. And his dream was that I wrote a book. We were at a book signing. I mean, I had to decipher some of what he was saying, and that the book impacted lots of different kinds of people. That's exactly what he said, different kinds of people. And even my hair is standing up on my arms now, because that's when it really became real to me that this is a calling and this is so important. People are suffering. People are hopeless and they're in despair. And there is an answer. There's a way out. There's the blending of the science and like biblical strategies that's profound and well documented. And in that moment, that's when my green light happened and I got the message to proceed. And one of the things he told me, my husband told me that morning, was he could see the title of the book and it was Moan. And I'm like, I don't think so. That doesn't sound right. This is a book about, you know, God and his grace. And then I looked up the definition of the word moan. And Merriam-Webster said it's a low, prolonged sound of pain, grief, or distress. And I literally remember sitting at my desk that day and just thinking, oh my gosh, that's exactly what this is. That's exactly what the suffering is. You know, that word's been rebranded, but that's what it's going to be. It's not the flashy titles I had planned, but it is what it is.
My wife and I, we're not obsessed with them, but you know, we watch a lot of sort of the Datelines. And what every so often, particularly when you're dealing like with a parent and a child, and there's the learning of an untimely death. I've noticed that oftentimes someone who is there when the mother hears about it, or the family member, they say, I heard a sound I never heard before. And that's a bit of how you described. That really stood out to me.
No one wants to attend a tragic funeral, but especially the funeral of a teenage boy and what a mother goes through who's trying to get through that process. It is a sound that I say in the book I never heard before, and I hope never leaves my lips. It's just the sound of someone's heart being ripped from their chest.
It's like you're hearing the soul, like the actual soul or something.
It really is. And I don't know that most people understand what we're talking about when we talk about the phenomenon of suicide. You know, we're talking, I think right now in the news, you know, there's all of the information about Washington, D.C. and crime and Chicago and murder rates. I don't think most people understand the rate of suicide is twice as high as the rate of homicides. We're hyper-focused on homicides.
That's true.
Why are we not hyper-focused on the fact that suicide happens twice as often? Males are four times as likely to die by suicide, and especially our young men. Our young men are dying at an unprecedented rate. The numbers are overwhelming, but just to make it very real for people, in those age groups, you know, high school and young men, even children as young as 10 now, we're talking about 22% of high schoolers have reported considering suicide. That's stunning. That's a large number.
Right.
I have a son myself in that age group. And why are we not doing more? It's not enough to just see something, say something. It's not enough to just have the conversation. Some of the tactics right now frustrate me when we know, as of 2023, suicide has genetic anchors in four chromosomes. If you have that genetic defect, your risk is high. It just takes a situation or one of the other risk factors weighing in to overwhelm you. I don't know that people understand what I learned through these situations. My daughter's stepbrother came from a family with an overwhelming genetic history of suicide. We're talking his mom, his uncle, their father, his mother, her dad. We're talking about a five-generation legacy. And if we had known that, if we had understood that in a frame of how I understand it now, if you have that history, you take active, excuse me, let me start over. You do things to prevent a person being overwhelmed to the point that they act on it. It's no different than breast cancer. Everyone understands breast cancer now. You have the screening, you detect the genetic marker, and then you're hypervigilant about monitoring and preventing that cancer from getting a hold of you. It's no different. If you know that you have a genetic risk,
sure,
you then are learning and teaching your children healthy coping mechanisms, how to be resilient. Personal identity has a lot to do with someone who's at risk of suicidal behavior. Purpose in life. All of the things we know that help, that's what you do for people who are most at risk. And right now, you know, this study has been out for 2 years and I'm still not hearing anything. And the study was very reliable. We're talking about 1 million veteran files. I mean, that is very credible information.
Well, and it seems like pretty groundbreaking. And
it is.
Like a real revelation.
It is. I mean, so for me,
right,
and my understanding, if we know this leading cause of death more so than homicides, why are we not doing anything? And that's in the book. I kind of go into some of the other research that I found. I'm thinking that there may be some stigmas, some professional stigmas that limit some of the actions that we're taking. If we're in this rut of only science, then we're missing the fact that actively practicing your religion is shown to reduce suicidal behaviors by up to 80%.
That's profound.
I think so.
And, you know, over the last several, anytime there is a non-suicidal use of a firearm, and we've seen it recently, and then there is the expression of prayers, and we saw it, and I talked about it on the show, people that dismissed that as there needs to be more done. And one of the things I talked about is, you know, people who offer up prayer, I think there's a lack of understanding what that means. And it's almost as if some people who don't have that in their life, they think it's like going to Santa Claus at the mall before Christmas, where you just have a wish list. And there's a real lack of understanding and appreciation that it's not, well, that's all that we do.
Exactly.
And this book is a demonstration of that, the importance of it, but then also, okay, looking into the science and figuring out. I just think that's a very important thing.
You know, when I started writing this book, I didn't know what the outcome would be. Mm-hmm. I was just the scribe writing what was impressed upon my heart. And really, the book wrote itself. And I did my homework. I did my research. I have spent hundreds of hours, maybe even thousands of hours, plowing through databases and articles and research. And I even was surprised with what I was led into, simply because it is not professed. It is not funded. There are some researchers who are working on research projects that prove resilience, biblical resilience strategies are the answer. The science is clear. And yet we're doing all of these other things.
Right.
And one of the sources in the book, just, I remember almost crying when I read it, out of 90,000 National Institutes of Mental Health grants that were awarded, I think there were 10 that focused on religion. The number was so overwhelming, it's even hard to speak out loud. We're not researching it. In particular, mental health training programs are not teaching religion as a preventative or proactive measure. They simply don't. So we have many mental health practitioners who have not been trained, unfortunately, in some of the strategies that are shown to be most effective. And it's not because they don't want to be trained. Well, that's another argument. But those who want the training, it doesn't exist. It isn't there. And that should scare everyone. We have science that says this particular strategy works, and yet the training for the people who could intervene is absent. In fact, APA, the American Psychological Association, they had done a study a while back, and I believe, if I remember correctly, this is in the book, they found something like only 30% of their members actively practice religion or even believe that there's a God. So to your thoughts and prayers comment, I think that's what you see when people who don't understand are the ones that are kind of the gate holders for the therapeutic remedy. I think you do see this disconnect that I talk about in the book.
We're talking with Hope Sheridan in the book, Moan, Stories of Suicide, Grief, Grace, and God. You'd mentioned earlier, and there's a chapter regarding stigma. And, you know, we talk so much about it, and when it comes to suicide, but mental health overall, we hear so much about the stigma. And I think one day I realized, like, I don't even know if I know what the stigma is. because on one hand, we do publicly associate, like every time something horrible happens, right? What do we say? That's a mental health issue. But then we say, well, we don't want to stigmatize mental health. And I'm like, well, that, yeah, that obviously there is a mental health component to that. It seems like it. If you do something that is, you know, violent perhaps. But then how do you destigmatize it whenever every time something horrible, like the worst people in the world, we say, oh, that's a mental health issue.
Sure. It's just a label.
Yeah.
It's a label to help explain things. The way that I think about things, and especially suicide, people do things they would not normally do when their brain is not working the way that it should. And that is true for so many things, so many reasons. You know, there are the persistently ill mental health issues. What I find in the research about suicide is those four defective chromosomes that I'm talking about that put you at risk of suicidal behavior. There are other things that live on those defective chromosomes as well. Things like addiction. Things like PTSD. From the article that described this groundbreaking research, they list post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, schizophrenia, mood disorders, ADHD, risky behaviors, alcohol use disorder, antisocial behavior. What we see is those abnormal behaviors that include suicidal behavior are the result of defective genes. No different than any other illness. But somehow when we talk about suicide, we talk about it differently, or don't talk about it really, don't want to talk about it because it's so scary. Yet it's no different than many of the other medical conditions that are the result of defective genes as well. And until we become not afraid to talk about suicide in a meaningful way about actual things that we can do to help, we're not going to get better. And we have to get better. We're losing our young men. And that's not to say there aren't young women, but the statistics are so profound that is young men are at an increasing risk that we've just not seen before. And often, you know, some of the more disturbing cases involve social media, risks that you can't possibly see, very impulsive risks that parents just don't think are out there. When we are talking about suicidal behavior, you know, we're talking about the thoughts, the attempts, the actions. And I think a lot of times we only focus on the actions, you know, the attempts that people actually make. And especially what I wish I had known earlier in my parenting life is we need to assume every child is at risk. You can't predict it. And you don't want to wait until it's too late. There are ways to teach your children healthy ways to cope. there are ways to build resilience into your children's lives. And I'm talking about 5 years old, 8 years old, 10 years old. You don't wait until they're a teen. There are ways to make them resilient, give them a healthy self-identity, give them a purpose. Even at 5 years old, children have a purpose. And there's a better way. And what we're doing, obviously, is not working. The rates are only going up. And even some of the current campaigns that are firearms related, you know, that's a symptom. It's not the root problem. I see this whole thing as there's a process improvement to be made here. And until we acknowledge the root of the problem, we're not going to get better. And the weapon is not the root. Mental health is the root, but how we are solving the problem needs to change.
Our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, Hope Sheridan. The book is Moan, Stories of Suicide, Grief, Grace, and God. Any final thoughts for people listening? Oh, when's the book signing?
The book signing at ABC Books is on October 11th from 12:30 to 2:30. As a final thought, you may be someone who has never experienced a friend, a family member who's committed suicide. It's still affecting you. Each suicide affects 5 family members and 135 community members. I assure you, your children, by the time they're out of Springfield Public Schools or any other school in the area, they will know someone who's been affected by suicide. This is a community problem, more so than anyone wants to acknowledge. And it's going to take a community of family, churches, agencies to get behind a proven method that works. And I don't see this as a problem that's going to be solved by grants. So that people have access to the information that's in the book, you know, whether you get the book or not, I've put as many of the resources of the book on a website so that you can access it anytime. The website is www.moanstory.com. And just so that you don't misspell it and end up somewhere you never intended, that's moanstory.com. I'm asking family and community members and church people, come together and solve this from a grassroots perspective. We can do this. We just need to implement some good old-fashioned strategies that we know work and have the courage to do it. We can make a difference.
Hope Sheridan again, author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, the book Moan, Stories of Suicide, Grief, Grace, and God. For Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed.